Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 59, and it's Patriots Week. We've been waiting for this. Dave, really, since the schedules came out in April, this is what people point to. It's a rematch, of course, of the AFC Championship game of 2016. And since we spoke on Monday, Bill Belichick, he who never fails, and Tom Brady, he who never makes a mistake, were a double-digit favorite on the road and lost. Something that only, if you follow the Steelers, only apparently the Steelers were able to do on a consistent basis. The Patriots obviously hasn't happened very often. And the reality is it hasn't happened very often. The Steelers, who were 20-3 in their last 23 games, but it sets this game up, as we talked about before the Ravens game. Neither of these two games are the defining games for the teams coming in. They could lose, and the game Sunday still is the most important. But does it change anything that the Pats lost, Dave? And welcome to the show.
Yeah, happy Wednesday. And yes, the Patriots are coming. There are several different ways you can look at what happened Monday night to the Patriots. I haven't been paying attention to the major media since that game ended. How are they? And I know you do. I know you watch sports, Scott Van Pelt and all the, couple different national shows. How is that loss being framed? Is it, they didn't have Gronkowski? Is it, the Dolphins really, really surprised the Patriots? Was it all just, was it the Patriots looking ahead to the Steelers? Was it all the, the Patriots just don't play well down in Miami? How are you seeing this framed right now?
A little all of the above, depending on who you ask. But I think the overarching tenor is, well, everybody expects the Patriots to come out and be the Patriots this weekend. Not necessarily win the game, but you rarely see the Patriots, whatever term you want to use, lay an egg, play poorly back in back-to-back weeks. And you can point to the Patriots' defense early in the season. The one thing that's consistent with Bill Belichick, and I think this is a good analysis, is that the Patriots figure things out. When things go badly, they fix them quickly. Now, does that mean they're going to come out and play a great game this weekend? I don't know, because if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm concerned by that performance I saw Monday night on the defensive side of the ball. Now, it's clear, let's be straight up about it, they're missing guys on both sides of the ball. Obviously, Gronkowski on the offensive side, but they're 20-5 without Gronkowski and going into that game Monday night, and they won a Super Bowl without him. But remember, they don't have Julian Edelman, who's out for the season. Okay, that's on that side. And then on the defensive side, maybe guys who aren't as well-known names in Carl Van Noy and Flowers. There are a couple guys out there that
Hightower. They lost Hightower.
Yeah, sure, Hightower. I'm drawing a blank. Is it Carl Van Noy? I'm drawing a blank on whether I got his name right, but
he's out in the branch. As you mentioned, Branch has been banged up. Flowers has missed the last two games, I think, as well. So yeah, they're going through what every team in the NFL goes through. They're missing players just like other teams in the NFL miss players.
Right, and they got exposed by, nobody. For some reason, people think Jay Cutler's a terrible quarterback. Jay Cutler's not a terrible quarterback. I mean, I think the damning of Jay Cutler is, body language and does he care. He's played plenty of bad games, but he's not you don't put Jay Cutler in the bottom barrel of the basket or the bottom group of guys when it comes to quarterback talent. Jay Cutler's got a great arm. He knows the game. He's a smart guy. He obviously hasn't lived up to what people hoped a Jay Cutler would be, but he's a talented guy, and he played a good game on Monday night.
Yeah, he completed like 25 of 38, 263. That's not earth-shattering.
No.
You know, it was effective.
Three touchdowns. Yeah, that's key.
Did not turn the football over.
That's key.
That's always key. And, you know, Cutler in the past has had some silly turnovers and some fumbles to boot, you know. And I think overall they did a decent job of moving him around. The Patriots still had, I think, two sacks in that game overall. So, and they were able to get a little bit of pressure on him on at time. We saw them do some things that the Steelers do. You know, we saw them go empty set. We saw them move their running backs around in Drake and use him. And, you know, look, that's not anything that the Steelers that's not something that the Steelers are going, oh, thanks for showing us that, you know, because we've been seeing that all year with Le'Veon Bell lined up outside. Now, did the Patriots just not expect it with Drake? Even if they didn't, I'm sure they had enough time to adjust as the game went on there. I think the biggest, it was 6-0 early on in that game, and I thought, boy, that's a bad start for the Dolphins, because when you get down there, when you are able to drive on them, you damn sure better not come away with field goals. You better get touchdowns up on the board, and they did not do that. And really, by the time the Patriots, had that, after their first several drives were very, unsuccessful. They put one together and got a pass interference call. Then lo and behold, here we are with 6:18, I think, left in the second quarter, and it's 7-6 Patriots. But to the credit of the Dolphins, I think they answered on that very next drive there. And look, even at halftime, this game was far from decided. I think it was 13-10 Dolphins there. But they really the Dolphins played consistently well throughout the game on both sides of the football. And of course, when we have our guest Ben Volen on a little bit later, we'll talk a little bit more about what the Dolphins did right, what they didn't do right, and what the Patriots didn't do, what they did do and didn't do right. The biggest thing is, Tom Brady wasn't great in that game.
I'll just jump in here, Dave, on that and just say, Tom Brady looked as bad as I've seen him look going back to maybe 2014 against the Chiefs, if I have my years right. I mean, you come out from the very first pass he threw into the flat on just a little out route on the right side that he threw into the ground. The second pass on the left sideline was late and behind. I think it was Cooks on that play. And it didn't look good from there on. And I don't know what it was. And obviously a lot's been written in the 48 hours since then. But it just didn't, Tom Brady, the one thing you expect is accuracy from Tom Brady. And it was not pretty Monday night.
Yeah, and 24 of 43, 233. The two interceptions were great. Interceptions by Xavier Howard. I mean, just absolutely. One of those was a pass, 45, 50 yards in the air down the middle of the field. And of course, the first one was just great, great coverage by Xavier Howard as well too. But
you wonder, people ask why DBs can't make that play he made on that long ball. If they made the play he made on the long ball, you're playing wide receiver. Honestly, I know we joke about that, but that's really what that is. The ability to not only to get your head around at the right time, track the ball, and he made up some ground. I mean, if you look at it, if you want to really analyze the throw, Brady underthrew it probably by a step or two. But, Howard's a step or two behind. He has to make that. Then he just makes a perfect play on the ball. And, Gruden or whoever was it, don't have my announcing teams right. Who the announcing team, they were dead on the play, and just in terms of how good an interception that was. That's as good as you'll see a guy kind of tracking a ball and taking it right away from the receiver.
Yeah, he stayed in phase. You know, when you lose steps like that, you better just turn your head and run. You don't try to find a football until you're back in phase there, and he was able to do that. And then he played the eyes and played the hands, you know, got his head around enough time to find a football. At worst, what you're hoping for there is just a pass breakup. You know,
right. I mean, right. And you're feeling good about that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, for him, it really was a great play by Xavier Howard all the way around. I mean, it really, not a lot of cornerbacks in this league make that interception, plain and simple. Like I said, you know, more than anything, you're hoping to get in there and prevent a super explosive play from happening there. But in order to beat the Patriots, David, you know, it almost takes a perfect storm in several areas. And part of that is Tom Brady missing some throws. So, you know, that's going to happen.
2 weeks in a row now. He wasn't good against Buffalo in that win. You know, no TDs and an interception, just kind of pedestrian stats. And that's all they needed in that, I think it was 23-3 victory over Buffalo. But just something to pay attention to. You know, early in this game, are the Steelers able to get Brady off his mark? Are they able to get pressure up the middle, get in his face? Nobody likes that. We've talked about that a million times. And see how accurate he is, because, you know, if he's not, it's going to make things a lot more tolerable for the Steeler defense on Sunday afternoon.
And it looks like PM light rain on Sunday. So, you know, obviously, both teams have to play in it, right? But the sloppier the conditions, I think the better for the Steelers. You know, especially if we're dealing with some moisture, and, you know, other than snow there. So obviously, still a long way to worry about the weather there.
For those who want to know, in Pittsburgh right now, it's 20 degrees now. A high of 26 tomorrow, 27 today. Then, you know, gradually, Sunday is the best day here from here to there. Friday, a high of 31, Saturday, a high of 35. And then Sunday, just a low of 36 and a high of 42. Dave, I'm not seeing quite the, precipitation numbers that you are just yet. But the point is, the temperature should be comfortable. It's like, you know, when the Steelers played the Bengals the other night, 2 weeks ago, that's about what the temperature was, you know, high 30s. It was a little cooler against the Ravens, but temperature-wise, it doesn't look like weather's going to be a factor, which is nice for, you know, obviously those who want to go to the game Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm showing 80% chance of precipitation right now from the Las Vegas Metroplex.
All right. Okay. All right. Excellent. We're going to have our man Ben Valens going to join us here. We'll obviously get a look. Dave and I, of all the teams that we follow, clearly the teams in the AFC North, we see twice a year and know a lot about them. But, you know, we feel like we probably know a fair bit about the Patriots as well. So, and we're excited about this game coming up Sunday. This is, you know, I just want to throw this one thing out there, because it's something that's annoyed me during the course of the year. And I know it annoys Dave as well. You know, we kind of take the ranting and raving on Twitter that fans have at times about firing coaches and all that stuff. It kind of water off a duck's back. It comes with the territory. And you know, 80% of the time, it's just people blowing steam or venting when the Steelers aren't doing things right. It's no big deal. But the thing that I think hopefully the podcast brings through, and that the reason that we do this and like to think we're reasonably good at it, if we can pat ourselves on the back a little bit, is we're kind of consistent in our thinking. And when the Steelers play a bad half or a bad game or have a couple bad games, we're not going to kind of throw out everything we've thought and accumulated over 40 years of watching football and, you know, 10 or 15 hard years of studying this team. It just doesn't go away when they play a bad game in Miami last year, or they play a bad game in Cleveland this year, or whatever it is. We're going to be consistent. And, you know, I saw you know, a bunch of people writing this week and how resilient the Steelers are and how tough they are. And it made me laugh because they're the same people in the media who were absolutely crucifying the Steelers and literally some of them calling for firing Haley or firing Butler, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And they just changed their song, their narrative, based on a week-to-week performance. And while we will grade and critique the performance and talk about the good and the bad, you know, we talked about the team. Both of us, I think, predicted something in the neighborhood of 12-4 and 13-3 for the Steelers when they're here. And it's what Mike Tomlin said yesterday that I think was key to the points that he made is over time, things will reveal themselves. So, you know, we're not going to take a game and just change our whole philosophy on what we think the Steelers are. And over time, things change. My view of who Bud Dupree is today is different than what I thought Bud Dupree was in week two. And it hasn't changed for the positive. But it's going to take, you know, a body of work and kind of the analogy of the big ship, the one that carries the crude. You know, if you want to start turning that ship, you got to do it about 10 miles in advance of where you want to turn it. And that's kind of how it takes us to change our overall opinion about the Steelers season. I mean, they are kind of where we thought they were. There have been positives and negatives. This team has done a complete 180. From the beginning of the season, where the defense was much better than we expected it to be overall, and the offense way underperformed our expectations, and now the offense is where we expected it to be at the beginning of the year, and the defense is kind of your worst nightmare right now as to where they are. But I just want to throw that in, kind of as we get to this final three games of the season, that you know our approach. That's why our approach doesn't change. This is where they are. This is kind of where we expected them to be. And this is, you know, why we expected them to be there. Okay, rant's over. Sorry, Dave.
All right, well, yeah, I mean, look, and Todd Haley does not call perfect games week in, week out. No offensive coordinator calls a perfect game week in, week out. Same with Keith Butler. There's games where they don't make the proper adjustments on one side of the ball or the other side of the ball.
And same with Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniel.
Right. I mean, now, do the Patriots perhaps maybe do it better, than the Steelers? Well, it's hard to argue that they don't. But you know, and the other thing, look, I pointed out in the post this past week those final couple of plays during that drive that David and I talked about the other day, right before the game. What ended up being the game-winning field goal there, based on what Ben Roethlisberger had said about him on his radio show and all. And if we are to believe Roethlisberger at face value, which, to be quite honest with you, Ben sometimes, you know, paints a different picture than what actually happened. But if we take his word that those were calls that came in from the sideline and that probably not the best calls, A, because of the personnel that was in the game, especially that throw to Xavier Grimble, because who normally would probably be in that spot, David?
Yeah.
McDonald. I'm saying who would normally be in that spot that Xavier Grimble was on that second down play?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that'd be Vance McDonald, and you know, I don't know if we want to go back into that again, but yeah, you know, different things happen, different guys, and you deal with it, right?
Right. I mean, look, they are going to make mistakes, and when they're obvious ones that we think that we know, and let's be honest here, none of us know how much one calls plays over the other. You know, there's so much stuff that, look, I mean, Ben does have a lot of liberty at the line of scrimmage, and that's, that's something that is a plus that you hope that all quarterbacks around the league have, is if they see something, they're able to switch to something else. I mean, you can have the perfect call, but if it's not against the right defense, it's no longer the perfect call. So you have to have the ability. So, you know, it's just the look, if you want to complain about firing somebody, wait until after the season. It's so tiring week in and week out to have people on Twitter and my email box fill up in the middle of a game saying, oh, they need to fire Todd Haley. They need to fire a lot of you don't even know what you're looking at anyway, to be quite honest with you. So you're just going off of results. Get yourself, go ask mom for Christmas to buy you a Game Pass subscription and start watching it that way. All right, my rant's over with.
All right, so like I said, we'll talk to Ben here in about 30 minutes, and we'll get in depth into the Patriots. So Dave, let's get back to the game, and let's get to Mike Tomlin. And injury wise, a couple things. One is Tyler Matakevich not playing this week. Mike didn't even, you know, he had to be asked about his situation, didn't update him out of the chute. Don't expect Matakevich, and we'll get into this linebacker conversation. Ryan Shazier, as expected, was put on the injured reserve list, and obviously the Steelers, and you know, they've chosen this path, and I think it's fine that they will communication will be very bare bones and as necessary in terms of updating his condition. And there's not a lot for us to add to that. From a football perspective, it's a non-factor. Obviously, for a life perspective, it's we're all on pins and needles, hoping that Ryan's fine and things go forward. The fact that there are a ton of people in his hospital room, you know, during the game and after the game and celebrating, to me, you know, I'll take small positives, and they're FaceTiming and all those things. So things, you know, appear to be upbeat, and he's clearly capable of talking and doing all these things and moving his upper body that we've been able to see. And we'll just hope for the best, as we have from the beginning, from there on. And then, you know, we'll see about the other guys. Juju's obviously back in, and that was the roster move. And we'll find out about Mike Mitchell, Vance McDonald, and a couple other guys with some dings here. Dave, Cody Sensabaugh was one mentioned coming up here today, this afternoon. Did I miss anything? Did I forget anybody?
Well, it was the three shoulders.
Right.
McDonald, Sensabaugh, and Tyler Matakevich there. And, you know, obviously Mike had to be asked, as you said, about Tyler Matakevich, so we'll see what happens there. The fact that McDonald was not able to return to that game the other night, you know, is not great news. Cody obviously played through it. I think the biggest thing to come out of the press conference on Tuesday was the fact that Joe Hayden will practice in some form or fashion this week. And look, I mean, you can parse what Mike Tomlin had to say about it however you want to, but he really framed it as a legitimate chance for Joe Hayden to play against the Patriots. So if Joe Hayden plays, would he be in every down player in his first game back? I don't know. I mean, to me, you don't send a guy out there unless he maybe is able to handle a full load. But it'd be interesting to watch what happens with Sensabaugh. I mean, if Sensabaugh's not able to go this week, you better hope that maybe you can at least get Joe Hayden back in the uniform to run around a little bit out there, because I'm not sure you want Sutton playing a full game just yet, and a guy like maybe Brian Allen or William Gay having to back him up there. So definitely something to watch there. I think Thursday with Joe Hayden would obviously be the key day.
And Dave, I'm with you 100% here. I've said all along, I didn't think Hayden would play the week he came back. I think they'd work him into practice. But if he goes full on Thursday, I would expect him to play. And your point about Sensabaugh adds a little urgency. You know, if you looked at the rotation of the cornerbacks, they were basically going two series at a time, kind of both inside and outside. And then at the end, Sutton was on the field when it wasn't his turn. And now we know clearly that was more likely because of injury rather than anything he was doing spectacularly well. So it is something important to watch there, because, you know, I don't see them throwing Brian Allen out there. I would think it would be a situation where Will Gay might be pressed into service, or Mike Hilton be pressed into service. You know, I would assume Gay might be ahead of Hilton on the outside, but, you know, I'm just guessing on that. At that point, kind of all bets are off if both Sensabaugh and Hayden were unable to go.
Yeah, no, let's hope we don't even have to get into that discussion. Here's what Mike Tomlin had to say specifically. We're getting back into the phase of things where it's time to have a Joe Hayden discussion. He's worked hard and has done some good things. He'll be on the practice field in some form or fashion this week. The amount he's on the practice field will determine will be determined by what he does when he gets out there, and obviously his availability will be determined by what he does when he gets out there and the quality of it. So that's something that bears watching day to day, Mike Tomlin said. And you know, when pressed later on during the press conference, you know, is Joe Hayden going to play? He says he doesn't know right now. I believe that. I don't believe this is just a ploy by Mike Tomlin to get the Patriots to also have to prepare themselves for Joe Hayden. And look, I think if people go watch the press conference from Bill Belichick this morning, Bill in so many words said, look, this is a Steelers defense that really hasn't changed that much from last year outside of the personnel. Obviously, no longer have Lawrence Timmons in there alongside Vince Williams. You know, some new faces, of course, on the outside. He noted that really the most noticeable thing over the last couple of weeks with the Steelers is how much dime they are playing in third and long situations there. So, that is obviously true there. So the Steelers, here's the thing, and this is probably dovetails into the direction we're going next, what Mike Tomlin had to say about the inside linebackers. You know, if you're the Patriots, do you try to go large with Rob Gronkowski back and guys like Burkhead and all? Do you try to go as large as much as possible, sort of what like the Ravens did, in order to have the Steelers-based defense on the field? Or do you try to, you know, go your 11 personnel, and are you playing into the Steelers' hands if they can get one of those inside linebackers off the field?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how the Patriots do things in terms of what they do with that personnel. We've talked about the running backs, the two tight ends situations that they couldn't do against Miami. What are they going to do? And then the Steelers. Well, let's get into the Steeler linebacker situation, Dave, and what Mike said. I've got my evaluation, and I certainly don't. I don't see 1/100th of the time and effort that goes in at practice that the coaching staff does. So it's just my personal opinion. I'm not saying mine's better. It's just I was just surprised at the whole way the LJ Fort situation didn't go down. I mean, he's there behind Matakevich, and I think people who listen to the show long enough know that I felt like maybe LJ Fort might be even a better option than Tyler Matakevich. But clearly, Matakevich is the Steelers' guy in those situations. He was, unfortunately for him, you know, in his first opportunity to get some playing time, he gets hurt and he goes down, so he's not available for this game. Sean Spence isn't on an NFL roster. Arthur Motes hadn't played inside in years, really hadn't played inside almost at all in his time with the Steelers. And the Steelers bypass LJ Fort for both of those guys. And, you know, people saw the gif probably Alex put up last night that I commented on. You can pick a play for any player in the league in virtually any game and make him look bad. But just Sean Spence didn't have a good game. Dave wrote about it. Arthur Motes didn't have a good game. I mean, to me, Dave, people ask, why was LJ Fort on the roster? Why didn't they sign Sean Spence? Well, they think LJ Fort's a very good special teams player. That was his primary role. He wasn't seen as being a first line defender. So that's the answer of why you had Fort rather than Spence on the roster. But what do you expect to see coming into practice today and this week, Dave?
Well, you know, I didn't buy all along that Arthur Motes was going to get the lion's share of the snaps against the Ravens, and that did not happen. Now, all along since this injury has happened and since Matakevich was injured, you know, I led the charge with thinking that Fort should be the guy that should be out there. It became very apparent last week, you know, from reports that You know, he was probably going to be the third man and not the first man there. Sean Spence, yeah, familiar with the defense, yada yada. Let's be clear here. I mean, there are some things that he had to pick up, and it's been a while since he's been on the football field. Even so, he got the lion's share of the snaps, and it wasn't even close. You know, 30-something snaps to what Moats had, what, 18, 19? And then L.J. Ford, I think something like 8 or 9 in that game. that should probably be flipped around here. You know, look, L.J. Ford was on the field for that interception. Read into whatever you want there. I'm waiting for the charting to come back from Alex to see, you know, successful play rates when a certain, you know, guy was alongside Vince Williams there. But here's what we know overall. Collectively, that inside linebacker group was not good at all, collectively. You look at the successful.
I think you say collectively that defense wasn't good overall.
Yeah. But especially, look, you cannot let an opposing offense have a 60, what did I write? 65, 4, 8, 6, you know, six, it was in the 60s successful run rate against you. And that's exactly what it was. I'm trying. You know, I think it was even Melanie that asked me, when was the last time I remember the Steelers' defense giving up a successful run rate that high? It might have been a few years ago against the Baltimore Ravens when they ran all that outside zone against them. You cannot allow that sort of run success and it be good. And it wasn't. I mean, because then you're scrambling to do what you can to fix the run, and then you're going to get play action. Look, Arthur Motes does not belong inside. You know, hat tip to him to be an emergency guy and be able to do that, but it's just not what he does. He's not used to doing it either. Will another week of practice help him in that area? Well, you could take the viewpoint of it can't get any worse, you know. Sean Spence, very, very slow diagnosing some things. It looked like he hadn't played in several weeks. Overran one over to the left side. Had trouble getting off blocks on a few others. Just generally slow. And L.J. Ford had a demerit or two, I thought, in the game as well, too. I thought what Tomlin said, David, on Tuesday was perhaps one of the better quotes of his you know, this season. He you know, he was asked specifically how did he think Moats, Spence, and Fort all played against the Ravens, and does he think that there's room for growth? And he says all three had their moments positively and negatively. He goes on to say we're going to assess those moments and work to accentuate the positives individually and collectively and minimize the negative. It might be a redistribution of snaps. It might be a redefining of roles within that division of labor, and not only this week, but in the upcoming weeks. He goes on to say it's just how it goes. We're going to go through a similar division of labor of discussion, we were going through a similar division of labor discussion at the beginning of the year when we were trying to find out rhythm between Juju and Martavis and Eli. It happens from time to time. And none of it happens probably as quickly as you would like, but the more you play, and particularly if you are open to letting it reveal itself to you, it will. And then he was later asked, you know, would he like to see one guy? And in so many words, Tomlin said, look, you're not going to, you know, it'd be nice finding one guy to be able to replace Shazier, but in so many words, Tomlin says, good luck with that. I mean,
right.
And that's correct. So you go back and you kind of parse what he said. Maybe we will see a little bit of a different division of labor this week against the Patriots. Here's what we know. If they do the same thing that they did against the Ravens, it's probably not going to work.
It didn't work against the Ravens. You have every reason to expect – you have a reason to realize the talent at the running back, in terms of catching the ball, and at the tight end and wide receiver position is superior to what the Ravens had, and you got a better quarterback. So, yeah, I'd be shocked if we see Moats at all inside. Look, again, this is evaluating players isn't knocking them personally. I had somebody say, you wouldn't have been able to make those tackles on Collins and Buck Allen. Yeah, right. Of course not. That's not what we're talking about. I mean, yeah, Sean Spence had two major surgeries. I get it. He's had a rough road, and congratulations for having an NFL career. There's also a reason he hadn't been in the league since September. He struggled out there. And the Steelers, what I would expect them is to play a lot of dime in this game and not, only have one linebacker out there a lot of the time. And, so whether that's, a lot more time for William Gay or whatever it is, I expect the Steelers to come up with some different wrinkles because they get exposed at that position. And
I think what you need to do, you need to find some way to get, a guy maybe like Sean Davis down low in the box area. Is that covering Rob Gronkowski? Is it kind of functioning, quasi linebacker, if you will? I don't know. But I think Sean Davis, a guy that probably had arguably the worst game of any defensive player against the Ravens, he's probably going to have a really, really strong game Sunday against the Patriots. And look, we'll see how much too deep safety they play in this game, but I don't think that's the way. Personally, I don't think that's the way you need to try to work at defending against the Patriots. And yada yada man coverage, yada yada pressure on Brady, yada yada pressure up the middle. Don't the worst thing that you can probably do is just kind of quote those known narratives and facts. You go back and you watch the Ravens tape, David. They were able to do a lot of good things with four-man pressure, but you can say play man all game and all like that. It sounds good in theory, but you have to remember when the Patriots use kind of those bunch formations, and they're going to do it a ton with Rob Gronkowski back, you just can't man up on the line of scrimmage there because you'll just get rubbed off immediately. That's why you see the guys play off against bunch formations. Everybody's got a guy, and then they're going to have to watch what they come. So you can't press. You can't jam. You can't interrupt how those guys get off the line of scrimmage. That's why teams use, and the Steelers use, bunch formations like that. Those guys like to run a lot of switch routes as well, especially when Gronkowski's on the field. And one thing that we did not see, at least I did not see a lot of against the Dolphins, is the Patriots effective, use it a lot and be effective at running some of those quick rubs and those quick slants there. So it was a big factor, Rob Gronkowski not being on the field, but it's not, one player does not make an entire offense there. As we mentioned, Tom Brady was not sharp.
Do you expect the Steelers to play a lot of man in this game? Because I'll tell you what, right now, they're going to get torched playing man. I mean, look, I realize Tom Brady's picked his own apart, but the way the Steelers are going to make this thing work is getting pressure, in my mind, because it doesn't matter whether they play. They don't have the personnel to play man. Artie, okay, I'm fine with Artie playing man and even playing bump, but I'm not comfortable with what I've seen of late. Them playing man defense against these guys. I don't expect them to, I know everybody talked about it. It got asked in the press conference yesterday. They've talked, you have to play man against the Patriots. That's how you stop them. That's not how the Steelers are going to win this game.
Yeah, I expect them to play more man, David, than they played in the AFC Championship game. They're going to have
to. Which was none, basically. But, yeah, okay, I'm with you on that.
All right. They're absolutely going to have to be able to do that. In this game, now how the Patriots end up, trying to counter that, and look, remember that you had James Harrison playing a lot of snaps in that game against the Patriots. You cannot, like it or not, folks, and no, James Harrison's not moving inside linebacker, people.
And neither is T.J. Watt.
Nader's T.J. Watt. I mean, those guys, their ability, their athletic ability. Look, you can line those guys up occasionally in the middle of the defense, yes, but now you don't have guys like Ryan Shazier to line up off and come off the edge in their place either. So keep that in mind there. You have to have some athleticism on the outside to be able to drop with some of these guys, to be able to keep up with some of these running backs coming out of the backfield. You just cannot line up your front five in base defense and say, go get them. Now, do I think we're going to see that a couple times in this game? Yes, but you have to have the ability to drop guys like Watt into the middle of the field and both deep out into the flat, curl area as well, too. You have to be able to play some effective zone in these situations, and probably most notably on third down situations. I think you're going to see dime, but you're not just going to throw dime out there just to throw it out there either. All of it's going to be based on what the personnel groupings are out on the field. Like I said, about 10 minutes ago there, I think the Patriots will be doing the Steelers a favor if they go 11 personnel group and all like that. Now some can say that they're too tight end personnel grouping with Gronkowski is like having an 11 personnel out there for obvious reasons, and you would be correct in saying so. It gives you the ability when you have Rob Gronkowski to either collapse the formation down into a heavier look and use him at the end of the line, or if you see a heavy grouping out there on the other side, by heavy grouping on the other side, I mean a base defense where you have non-sub package, and you have your two normal suspects inside linebackers out there, that's when you audibleize and get Gronkowski split outside, try to take advantage of a mismatch. So I think that Sean Davis, regardless of whether you play dime, whether you play heavy nickel, or whether you play be forced into a lot of base, I think Sean Davis is going to have a big role. Because, look, you don't want Mike Hilton. I mean, do you really want Mike Hilton on a guy like Gronkowski a lot of the game? We know we don't want a guy like Robert Golden out there in situations against Rob Gronkowski. Do you think about moving a guy like Artie Burns around? That's not traditional either. I mean, you'd have to replace him on the outside as well. So, you are going to have to get pressure. I think one thing that the Dolphins did is when they did rush for, which they did, they sent guys, they sent more than five at times against Tom Brady the other night, but on times where they did send four, it wasn't that, now they did get home a couple times, but it wasn't like you're thinking, my God, they're just beating them every off the snap every time and pressuring Brady. I think it was more of a slow, constricting kind of four-man pressure. And on top of it, I think they confused Brady a few times that he got rid of the football early. The best thing that you can do in this game is make Tom Brady try to hold the football, right? I mean, even though he got the ball out against the Dolphins fairly consistently, those were out towards the outside flats to guys like Burkhead and the running backs, because correct me if I'm wrong, their wide receivers didn't even have a catch in the first half of the game there. So I think you want Tom Brady throwing outside the numbers short and quickly, and in other situations, make him pat that football a couple of times and just hope that you can stay, that you can collapse and get that pressure on him, quick enough. Because obviously the more time that he has to stand back there and not move off the spot, somebody is going to get open here. So, how much time, David? I don't know. Belichick kind of talk like he's kind of expecting a little bit of it this on Sunday.
Yeah, Belichick just had his conference call with the Pittsburgh media. You can see that in his conference, press conference on Patriots.com. Dave retweeted a little bit earlier, so you can check that out as well to hear what he has to say. Dave, let's just talk a little bit more. We've looked ahead a lot. Let's just wrap things up from Ben and Mike and the game. A couple notes about the linebacker position. One is, on the last play of the game, and we didn't touch on this on Monday, but something that's worth noting is, you know, look, you're trying to get pressure on the quarterback, and people will see that T.J. Watt and James Harrison were in there, and it wasn't Bud Dupree. And you saw Watt come across the field and, you know, knock the ball loose or get to Flacco and get the ball out on the last play of the game. And there's no doubt over the last 8 weeks of the season here, after a decent start, that Bud Dupree has been somewhat invisible. And, you know, I don't want to pick on Bud specifically in this game against the Ravens, because Javon Hargrave didn't have a good game. Stephon Tuitt was not noticed at all. Did very little until a tackle late in the game. You know, we've already, you know, eviscerated the secondary for the work that they did in the linebacker. So this was kind of an across the board underperformance, but it has been disappointing to not see Bud Dupree. And look, the explosiveness, we still see it. It's not as if, you know, you say, okay, Bud looks like he's out of shape, or, you know, doesn't have the motor or whatever. We've seen it, but it's just not, he has not been able to step forward and come up with plays. And somebody said, you know, is it time to call Bud Dupree a more athletic Jarvis Jones? Well, I'm not ready to go there, but certainly from my expectations, Dave, Bud has not taken the step forward that I, you know, we saw a big step forward when he came back from the IR recall last year, and he was an influential player down the stretch. Both he and Ladarius Green coming back around the same time, having an impact for the Steelers. You know, Bud hasn't been that guy this year off the left edge. Your thoughts on him?
People are calling him Dud Dupree now. These guys, the Yinzers get creative, don't they? If anything, they get very creative. Look, you know, people just want to measure things by statistics at times, and you know, I understand the reason behind that, but it's not the end all do all. Now, has Bud Dupree absolutely been great this year? No, but you know, you go back and you read what Mike Tomlin had to say, you know, prior to the game about the outside linebackers, David. He, you know, I don't know how much coach speak it was. I'm trying to find a quote for you right now here. What he had to say here. In terms of what the defense, let's see. In terms of what the defense asks of the outside linebackers, has their role evolved away from being primarily pass rushers into guys who are asked to do more things in coverage? And Tomlin says, without question, and it's evolved. And this is more of a question of why James Harrison isn't playing. Without question, and it's evolved within the last decade since I've been here. Outside linebacker was a rush man's position in the early part of my tenure. Guys like Lamar Woodley and James Harrison were defensive end-like. They rushed the vast majority of the time. And with the evolution of spread football, read option football, RPOs, as the college guys call it, run pass options, and all the empty backfield stuff, it has become a hybrid position where they're asked to do a lot of things. Rush, drop in zone, play man-to-man. I just think it's part of the evolution of football, and I think outside linebackers are the most significant components to the adjustments that defenses have made. That's why 10 years ago, there were maybe three or four teams in the NFL, and that's why probably half the teams in the NFL now or 3-4 teams. You better have that flexibility in terms of getting people on their feet and playing on their feet because of the perimeter game, the spread game, and the RPO game. He says, and then Labriola asked him, within that answer, did that just explain to Steelers Nation why James Harrison isn't playing a lot of snaps? And Tomlin says, or also why Bud Dupree doesn't have 12 sacks, or why T.J. Watt doesn't have 12 sacks. The position probably is being redefined in a lot of ways by the game. Some of the plays we've seen T.J. Watt make in a passing game this year, the big-time interception in Cleveland in his first NFL game, the big-time breakup against Jordy Nelson and the Packers a few weeks ago. He goes on to say, 10 years ago, you would have never seen Lamar Woodley even in position to make those plays. That's just the evolution of football. He said he goes on to get asked how he would evaluate the three young outside linebackers, Bud Dupree, Watt, and Chickalow. He says, it's been exceptional play. We're getting quality play from those guys for the reasons I just talked about. Now, how much of that's hyperbole? Look, Bud Dupree, and I think I said this a couple weeks ago, Bud Dupree is the same player right now that he was in college. He really, and that's not good, obviously. You would like to see him be able to be more than just a run up the edge guy. You would like to see him, you would like to be able to see him use some counters a little bit more and be a little bit more effective as a pass rusher. Is he going to make it? Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see. Look, he's coming up on his fifth. We'll know what the Steelers think about him after this season, right? Because his fifth-year option's due.
This is year three, right?
Right, and his.
They got some more time, right?
No, this
coming is, coming into September, right? Okay.
Well, I mean, no. This is the remember this. What this is what Ryan Shazier's fourth year, right?
Yep. So what are they doing? March? I'm trying to remember what the deadline is. Is it March or is it like?
I think it's April. It's in the off season that they have to decide. But it's coming up that they're going to have to decide whether or not to pick up the fifth year option on him. So you would hope, in short, you would hope that he would be playing better than he is playing right now, I think. And now, how much of that is injury right now, too? You know, he had the shoulder earlier in the season. How much maybe is that affect him? And all, you know, I don't know. But you would obviously like him to be playing better than he is right now.
Okay. Other things from either Mike. So the kickoff return thing. Let's get that out of the way. Look, Mike doesn't ever comment. Rarely comments negatively on guys, and he doesn't throw guys under the bus. But that's as close as you'll get. In my mind, in listening to him for 11 years, of Mike kind of throwing a guy under the bus when he was asked about the kick return game. He said, you know, you guys wondered why, you know, he basically said after the game that the issue was fielding the ball. And he said, you know, you guys asked why we hadn't had Martavis Bryant out there before returning kicks. Now you see why. That's, you know, that's pretty damning of Martavis Bryant right there. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if his turn as kick returner is over. We saw, you know, glimpses of things. The first return he took, you know, up the left sideline for 38 yards with nobody, you know, near him. And then he took the one back for a touchdown on the J.J. Wilcox holding call. But the, you know, four consecutive returns that we talked about on Monday were awful. You're going to have Juju back. You know, Mike has used Fitz Toussaint back there regularly when he's been on the roster. So it would not surprise me if we've seen the end of Martavis, but I was surprised. Not that Mike did anything wrong. I think everything he said was accurate. It's just we're not used to hearing him say things quite like that.
Here you are, and Ben Rod, what do you think about Martavis Bryant and his play this year, David, overall?
Me? What do I think?
Yeah.
I'm massively disappointing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what you thought about that reaction on that deep pass the other night. Was that toward from Ben? Was that toward Martavis kind of acting like he kind of let up on that route? You know, I don't know. Maybe he was shrugging off something else. I don't know. But very disappointing here. And you know, one of our listeners and one of my followers, Andrew Ho, just sent me something from the Snapchat of Martavis' girlfriend, and it looks like she's in the hospital right now, and Martavis is up there sleeping in a chair by her side with a baby on the floor there. So
let's not say a baby on the floor.
Well, baby in a basket. In a basket on the floor. So the baby's on the floor. It's just in a basket on the floor.
Okay. The basket's on the floor. The baby's not on the floor.
Yeah, I don't have kids. I don't know how
that one's. You're going to hear about that one. on Twitter. And a baby on the floor. She's sleeping, and a baby's on the floor.
Well, the baby is on the floor. It's just in one of those baskets there, you know, kind of. But, I mean, Martavis is curled up with his legs on a couple of chairs there, sound asleep in the corner. So, is he going to be an excused absence from practice today? Oh, Lord, I don't know. But that was sent by Andrew Ho. So, Andrew, thanks for the heads up there. I don't know if she's pregnant or not or what's going on there. But the caption says, thank y'all for being by my side. And it's her taking a picture of Martavis while she's laying in a hospital bed. Okay.
How about Juju saying he watched the game with his helmet on? And Mark Cavoli tweeted out that he only took it off for commercials to eat and use the bathroom. So can you just – I know Juju is a cult – it deserved – a young star that fans have taken to love, and there's a lot to love. And this, I'm sure, will just it certainly made me smile. The visual image of Juju sitting there cheering and yelling with his helmet on watching the game. I have to say, I love it.
Yeah, and he there were pictures of that during the game the other night of him sitting there watching TV with a helmet on. So, look, it's great to be young and innocent, and, you know, that's kind of what he is right now. Look, it's going to be a big boom to have, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about the Patriots and getting Rob Gronkowski back. Make no mistake, it's going to be a huge thing for the Steelers to have a well-rested and probably chomping at the bit Juju Smith-Schuster back on this team as well, too, this week against the Patriots. There were a lot of things to like offensively about what the Steelers did the other night. Antonio Brown, a lot of people get caught up in those numbers of his, David, but, man, you turn the All-22 on of him, and it's just get more enamored of how he gets himself in position to be college open, if you will. I mean, it's just amazing, especially stuff like against Cover One, against the Ravens the other night. Even on that early pass down the right side there that ended up out of bounds there, man, he gets even with, I think it was Carr on that side, at about 9 yards into that route. And you know the old saying, if they're even, they're leaving. And he did. And I purposefully stopped that gift that I posted when he had a good yard and a half, you know, separation from Carr there. So there is no reason not to expect the Steelers offense to have some degree of success against the Patriots defense this week. I think the big question and it's obvious and it's expected is how will the Steelers defense be able to do against the Patriots offense?
All right, Dave, we got to jump out here, and we'll come back with our buddy Ben Valin coming up next. Okay, we had a little mix-up here, so we're going to continue with our conversation. Ben Valin, I guess we had some confusion as to the exact dates. He's on a plane back from Miami as Dave and I are speaking right now, so he's going to join us. We'll tape him tomorrow, and you'll be able to hear from him on our Friday podcast. So we'll just move it along, Dave. And we were in a lot of discussions about kind of what the Patriots are going to do and where they are. And again, we'll get into that in a lot more detail on Friday. And I want to come back to, you know, a lot of the positives offensively, a lot of negatives defensively. Is there anything from what Ben said on Tuesday, what Mike said? We talked about Martavis Bryant on the kick return game. We've talked about Bud Dupree, the linebacker situation. Anything that we missed?
Well, you know, we just hit on talking a little bit about Martavis Bryant, and Ben talked about him during this radio show, saying maybe this is a come out, come out party game for him and all. Remember, this is the first time. This will be the first time that Martavis has played against the Patriots. Okay, so when you go back and look at some of these previous meetings against the Patriots, you know, obviously last year in the AFC Championship game, they didn't have Le'Veon Bell after the first, you know, several plays due to a groin injury there. That really that really, you know, not only did the Steelers, you know, the Steelers offense couldn't keep up with the Patriots offense at that point there, you know, with D'Angelo Williams replacing Le'Veon Bell in that game, and they did not have a guy like Martavis Bryant, you know, Sammy Coates. Boy, they, you know, they just did not have the personnel outside of Antonio Brown to do anything. And, you know, I think that you go back and you look at that AFC Conference Championship game, they did a good job of double covering Antonio Brown in that game, especially when they when the Steelers would be in 3-on-3 by 1 settings, if you will. So, you know, the question you got to ask yourself is, you know, Belichick is usually tries to focus on one main thing that you do well and try to take it away from you. Will he, you know, is Antonio Brown going to be that guy? And if that's the case, then they're going to have guys, they're going to try to find the matchups with either Jesse James, because I'm going to assume McDonald's not going to play in this game. If Jesse James, Le'Veon Bell lined up outside like the Dolphins used Drake and all Monday night, or, you know, Juju in a certain situation 1-on-1, or a guy like Martavis Bryant. I think that you're going to have to see guys other than Antonio. Anything that you get from Antonio Brown, you know, maybe more than 50 yards, I think you got to take as gravy. And especially if you're able to get you know, a double or triple explosive play and even a touchdown out of him. Because I don't know about you. Look, I don't want to take anything away from Le'Veon Bell. We've seen him do some amazing things this year, and not so, you know, most of them being not with the football as a running back, although he has had some nice runs. I don't know about you, but I think I try my best to take Antonio Brown out of this game for the Steelers, and I make a guy like Martavis, Juju, or Le'Veon Bell beat me.
Absolutely. I expect AB to have over-the-top coverage the entire game. They won't let him take those whole shots down the sideline. We're used to seeing AB – people remember, used to seeing AB on the left side more than on the right side, you know, maybe not significantly more. But, you know, they wanted to do the work on Carr over there, and they did on Brandon – am I getting Brandon Carr right? And they, you know, they took him apart down that right sideline. You look at the Patriots defensive backs with Stephon Gilmore – and Malcolm Butler, and there'll be less of I expect to see AB back on the left side more often in this game where the Steelers are taking shots. But you're going to have Devin McCourty back there. He's a veteran guy, knows what he's doing. So I don't expect him to be, you know, catching balls like he did the way he did in the location he did against the Ravens, against the Patriots. The other thing is, look, we saw a little bit when you think about it. You know, not all Jesse James catches were inside the numbers, but a lot of them were. Vance had a couple outside the numbers, but a couple inside. Eli Rogers back making some good plays inside the numbers. And, you know, we see these smaller receivers now. Try this one more time. We see these smaller receivers now, and you saw it a lot in the Patriots game with Amendola. You see it with Eli Rogers. These guys, look, they know when they catch the ball, there are two things to do. One is try to be elusive and run if you have space, obviously, goes without saying. But two is when guys are with you, dive. Go low and dive and see if you can get an extra 2 yards rather than, you know, standing up to contact, taking a hit, and knowing that at 190 pounds, you're not going to, you know, with a DB running at you or a linebacker running at you, you're not going to tilt the balance your way. So you saw that with Eli getting a first down in the game on Sunday night. You saw it with Amendola on Monday night. So we'll see if Eli gets to work Eli and Juju. That's obviously what Juju's done well. Contested and work in the middle of the field. I'm with you, Dave. Those guys are going to have to do that to have the Steelers effectively move the ball offensively.
You know, one thing, it's too bad we don't have Ben on today. We'll definitely make sure that we'll see what the injury report starts saying this week. You know, Patrick Chung is a big part of what the Patriots do there. So I haven't read since, you know, he got dinged up in the second half of that game against the Dolphins as well, too. If they don't have Patrick Chung to be able to maybe line up on a guy like Juju or whoever in the slot, that could really be something to watch. And even if he does play and he's not 100%, you know, is the matchup in this game to watch Juju versus whoever. A linebacker or what? I mean, you better not put a linebacker on Juju. If you do, and Ben doesn't pick that up and get the football to him, something's wrong there. So I think a big point in this game. Look, Antonio Brown's had his success against Butler, and Stephon Gilmore has been a little bit of a disappointment at times this year, right? And I think AB has had some success against him in the past, too. So it's all going to be about how they try to – and I think that it would be silly not to bracket AB a lot in this game, to be creative, and hopefully – we saw what the Lions did a couple times during that game a few weeks ago, and then Ben tried to force that football to him over the top, and what happened?
Picked.
Right. That's the kind of thing they want to kind of bait Ben into relying into his security blanket. So I think a big part of this game, and look, God bless A. I'm not going to put anything past AB, because even sometimes against some of these coverages, if Ben has enough time, he'll find a way to get himself open. They would be silly, in my opinion, to run just some one deep safety coverage with single man coverage on AB on the outside. If they do, then Ben's going to do what he did against the Ravens and try to attack that up over the top there. And look, McCourty's a good safety, probably a lot more rangier than a guy like Eric Weddle is now at his age. But there's going to be an opportunity or two to do that. But remind me or make sure to make a note to ask about Patrick Chung. Well, of course, if you're a Steelers fan, you're watching the injury reports this week. Let's see what Patrick Chung and his practice participation is like. Obviously, trying to decipher a New England Patriots injury report on any week probably have a better chance of cracking the Illuminati or whatever else goes along with that, but we'll try to pay attention to that. And Bill Belichick did say there were a couple of moves on the way. I don't know if they've officially announced Kenny Britt transaction yet, and if they haven't, that's obviously going to be one of those. What's going to happen to that other wide receiver of theirs, David? Is he going to be out the door?
I'm drawing a blank on who you mean. Let me pull my Pats roster up here.
Dorsett.
Oh, Philip Dorsett, active in this game last week. Only non-quarterback who did not see a snap in the Dolphins the Patriots game, and those who remember the right into the preseason when Tolzien was screwing it up for the Colts, right at the end, they traded Jacoby Brissett for Philip Dorsett. And I think a lot of people thought that was a good trade for both teams. I mean, Dorsett out of Miami, a former first round pick, a burner, young enough that you don't lose that speed typically, but a guy who had not been particularly productive in Indianapolis with Andrew Luck and whomever else they were throwing out there at quarterback. Dave, I don't know. Is he in the last year of his rookie? Yeah, maybe he's not. They're obviously not going to pick up an option on him on his rookie deal. So he may have 1 year left. So maybe they keep him around and just don't activate him. But that's a good question. He obviously has not delivered what they expected. And this is, you go back to what they did at the end of last season with Malcolm Floyd. Picking up a guy like Floyd had the DUI situation, was released, I think, by the Minnesota Vikings at that point, by Arizona, and then picked up by the Patriots. So, again, Bill Belichick constantly trying to upgrade his roster, even on the, what are perceived to be the 47th through the 53rd guys on the roster. Good point. Kenny Britt, who was obviously released by the Cleveland Browns after – he signed and replaced Terrell Pryor. And, that's been a disaster for Pryor in Washington. Took the 1 year deal, bet on himself for the same amount of money, didn't have a good season, goes IR. Britt, the Browns offered him the money, he didn't get it taken. They signed Britt instead. He's been a disaster on and off the field. And now, he gets his chance, I guess, in New England.
Yeah, and I wrote last night on Twitter, it's just real quickly the end of Dorsett, because he did not play against the Dolphins there, and aren't Britt and Dorsett kind of the same player, David?
Yeah, I think Kenny Britt's bigger. you know, and more experienced, you know, we'll see. But yeah, that's a good, you know, if you're just picking guys, that's you know, that's not a reasonable thought that it could be the end of, you know, Belichick is certainly not going to stand on ceremony of, oh, I made the trade back then, so I'm not going to prove myself wrong that it was a bad deal. He's going to do what he needs to do to make this team the best he can for the next 3 weeks in the playoffs.
Now, obviously, their main guys are Cooks, Danny Amendola, and right now, you know, Chris Hogan's back, and they have some kid named Reedy. Of course, Matthew Slater's another wide receiver of theirs, but he's a special teams demon mostly. I don't know much about this kid Reedy. Maybe that's the roster spot they're going to play with right there, but, I mean, for Dorsett not to get in that game the other night, that doesn't bode well for him at all. And as far as guys that missed that game due to injuries or were inactive, linebacker David Harris, Van Noy missed that game. Marcus Cannon, their offensive lineman, missed that game. And Trey Flowers missed that game as well. Now, Mike Gillespie has been, I think, a healthy scratch for them.
Since week 8, by the way, very surprising. He's the free agent running back. They signed to an offer sheet. Buffalo didn't match. Scored a couple touchdowns early. I'm sure if you play fantasy football, people were all over him. And he was kind of their short yardage goal line back. And when Burkhead got healthy, he kind of lost that role, and he hasn't been active because he's not a special teams guy.
Yeah, we know that Dwayne Allen is not Rob Gronkowski, and that's going to be the common discussion and thread. You know, I think throughout the week is how much did the Patriots miss Rob Gronkowski in that game, and will the Steelers be able to defend against him? If you remember a couple of years back ago, David, when the Steelers last beat the Patriots when Tom Brady played. If memory serves me, they use a lot of Cortez Allen, a lot of you know, big dime defender, if you will, on a guy like Rob Gronkowski, and that was really the first significant playing time that Cortez Allen had during his career. And you know, the Steelers obviously had ball control, I think, in that offense. I mean, in that game as well, too. They did all the things right that you want to do in that game to beat the Patriots. Now, you know, some will say.
And Dave, I got asked on Twitter about Justin Gilbert because, you know, he last year, you remember, he came in and saw his really only significant playing time against Kelsey in Kansas City. They had him line up over top him, which would just say, maybe this, I'm just joking mostly here, 99% joking, but maybe the Steelers, you know, maybe the Steelers all year have been grooming Brian Allen to stand over Rob Gronkowski at the line of scrimmage and try and jostle him off the line, you know, at 6'3". He's not the thickest built, most built guy, but I'm kind of kidding. But, you know, we'll see if the Steelers come up with a defensive wrinkle to try and do something to make, you know, the release off the line or something a little more difficult here for Gronkowski.
Well, and that would entail them having to play a lot of dime, right? You know.
Yep. And that's what they did with Gilbert. They went, you know, they did show that dime.
So, you know, is that something? I mean, the guy is a cornerback that's kind of built like a safety, right? So, I would not. Yes, it's improbable to happen, but would I bet that it drastic times calls for drastic measures, right? You have to be
exactly.
You have to be creative. You can't let, plain and simple, you can't let Rob Gronkowski catch 7 balls for 70 yards and 2 touchdowns against you. You're not going to win the football game, I don't think, if that happens. If it does, God bless you. We've seen in the past, too, them ask a guy like Shamarco Thomas to run with a guy like Gronkowski. Obviously, you can go back early days of Rob Gronkowski when William Gay was asked to run down the seam with Rob Gronkowski. That didn't work out well either. So they are going to try to get a matchup with him. And it goes back to what we said about these inside linebackers. Are the Patriots going to use heavy formations a lot in an attempt to get one of these inside linebackers lined up on Rob Gronkowski? And if so, out of the group, I think I'd much rather see L.J. Fort turning and running with Gronkowski in certain situations out of base than I would, you know, a guy like Sean Spence or a guy like not Vince Williams here. You go back to a couple years ago, David, when the Browns have upset. Remember those games with the two tight ends when was it even Bruce Gronkowski that completed like only eight passes in a game against the Steelers in a win, and how they used Jim Day and Cameron Jordan against the Steelers, mostly against the base. And I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Spence played a lot of snaps in that game as well. So inside there against Gronk, that's going to most definitely, with obvious reasons, going to be a matchup to watch there. And I guess we've run a little bit long here, but we'll get after it again on Friday, talking to Ben Volen from the Boston Globe. And we'll give us time to watch a little bit more of this tape. We'll have full injury reports by then to update everybody on as well. We'll give you, of course, our predictions for the rest of the week, 15 games, in addition to what we think is going to happen with the Steelers and Patriots as well. And in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, we definitely have no issue with that. We'd like to give a special shout.
We definitely have no issue with you donating to the show.
Right. Chris Welsh, thank you very much for your generous donation this past week as well. It does not go unnoticed, and David will probably be sending out a couple more emails here this coming week thanking people who have donated recently. And with that, I'll stop flapping my gums until Friday.
It is Wednesday, and Todd McShay on ESPN.com came out with his latest mock draft as the Steelers taking a tight end from South Dakota State, a guy he has a second-round grade on in the game or at the end of the first round with the 31st pick. The only reason I bring it up is South Dakota State is playing James Madison on ESPNU on Saturday at 4:30 in the FCS playoff semifinals. So if you want to take a look at one guy who's a potential Steeler prospect, there you go. Something to watch on Saturday as we start bowl season. But we'll have Ben with us on Friday. We'll have our picks on Friday. And we'll have, hopefully, lots of great Steeler info as we, of course, we'll have two injury reports from here to there to get the latest on what's going on in the game. So as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.